We are now on agenda. We are on agenda item 14, C-3622 Willapa Bay Policy Briefing and Public Comment. And Ron, take your time to get done. We have a bit of work to do yet this afternoon. So take it away, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Chair Carpenter, Commissioners, Ron Warren, Director of Fish Policy for the Department. We're here today to, I'm here today with Marlene Wagner and Chad Herring. We're going to try to accomplish a couple of things briefly, but thoroughly for the commission today. Next slide. So I want to talk just a bit about a little bit of background and a proposed timeline and how we'll go forward. That's part of the review and modification of, or possible modification to the Willapa policy that the commission has undertaken through the comprehensive management plan. We also want to, in advance of February's annual briefing of the policy implementation in the fisheries, give some interim guidance, especially for the new commissioners, and a reminder for old commissioners, not old by any means, but previous commissioners, a reminder of past interim guidance that we've given, and then take any questions that you might have, and certainly listen to public comment. Prior to getting to background, I just wanted to say that at the December meeting, Director Suswin had committed that staff will take a first shot at the policy modifications and bring back to the commission. As folks may, as commissioners may understand, the North Falcon process, depending on different species abundances and different pressures, can be controversial in and of itself. We opted by the schedule you're about to see to not bring you back a schedule until later in the year, a modified policy until later in the year, so that our constituents and staff can stay focused on implementation of the policy and any interim guidance that you may give into next month for the North Falcon process. So next slide, and I'll turn it over to Marlene. Marlene, was I gonna do this one?
That was the plan, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so sorry about that, little hiccup. Just a little bit of a background. I've already touched on the comprehensive plan, but the timeline that we've been going through, policy had been adopted in 2015, expires or set to expire 2023. Work towards that. I find myself working backwards on this slide, my apologies, but the initial intent of the policy was to provide general guidance and management objectives for salmon fisheries within Willapa Bay. It also worked at trying to provide some additional guidance, like in some other policies where the priorities for different species were for the different sectors, recreational and commercial in this case. And given all that, even though I went backwards on those first three, again, my apologies, next steps would be just the proposed timeline and the recommendations that we will make in the future about policy modifications. And then we'll also talk about interim guidance that's possible for 2021. In future meetings. So now, Marlene, this is all about you.
Thank you, Ron. Yeah, so I'm just going to go over the proposed timeline for the coming year. On January 28th, we did check in with the Fish Committee, and I'm here to present the timeline for adoption of Willapa Bay policy revisions, and also ask the Commission for interim guidance on key policy issues presented here to be considered in February for the 2021 fisheries planning process. In February, we have two goals. One is to receive that commission interim guidance for 2021 North of Falcon, and also to provide our briefing on implementation and performance of Willapa Bay salmon management policy for the upcoming season. Also check in with the Fish Committee. And before the June 24th to 26th meeting, we'll meet again with the Fish Committee in March and April to have discussions about our progress and receive feedback. And then in June, brief the commission for draft policy revisions and analyses based on our recommendations, hear public testimony, check in with the Fish Committee. We want public comment to be at the forefront and have a meaningful public process. So we plan to hold public meetings to collect input on our draft policy revisions in July and come back to the commission in August. Oh, sorry, next slide. Oh yeah, we'll consider final draft recommendations, hear public testimony, and then again, go back to the public and hold meetings to collect input on any final draft policy decisions. Our September and October meetings with the commission in conjunction with public meetings will allow us to work through gathering comment and reporting back in an iterative way. And so we will meet with the commission in September and October for our final decision for adoption of policy changes, while also checking in with the Fish Committee. And if nobody has any questions about the proposed schedule, we'll go ahead and go on to Chad for the rest of the presentation.
We have a question from Commissioner Thorburn, please.
Yes, thank you, Marlene. I think the other day there was a question about the advisory committees, the Willapa Bay advisory committees. I think there were both a commercial and recreational. I think the response was they expired and we're in the process of rebuilding those. I'm wondering how they might fit into the process, the timeline.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to let Ron take over for that one.
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Thorburn, thank you. And I may not have been as clear as I wanted to be at the Fish Committee meeting. I know that we've received some comments about what I said at that committee meeting. It is true that the current advisory structure in Willapa Bay has expired. We're hoping that those advisors will continue forward. They've been involved for many, many years. They're knowledgeable about the waters, the fisheries, and other aspects within Willapa Bay. As we always do, we will look to try to increase participation in the processes that we follow. So while those advisory committees stay in place, we will expand to not just call an advisory committee with a public comment at the end, but have a public meeting, hoping that the advisors are there, engaged, providing us comment, identifying themselves, so there's additional connectivity to them from other folks in the public, and continue to provide recommendations on management actions to the director per our advisory handbook. So yes, there may be a determination in the future, but as it stands, it's just a process change for how we will conduct those meetings, having a general public meeting, and as people comment, provide input to us, we hope that the advisors would identify themselves as advisors, and we will certainly continue to recognize them as that.
Commissioner McIsaac has his hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wondered if you could scoot back to your proposed timeline. And I have a couple of questions in the dangerous category of a schedule. One question about February and then another question as we move through about options. So in February, receive commission interim guidance on the North of Falcon business. This is the fishery business. What's the abundance of fish and how many should be reserved from catching the ocean and come back? I don't see anything on here about the hatchery component. So we have now kind of suspended or reserved for options any big changes in the hatchery program. And my question has to do with whether in February we're going to hear anything about that or whether it's the staff's opinion that we should just stay in the same category that we were last year of reserving options, don't make any changes until we've had a chance to work through a policy change, or should there even be something on here about the 2020 brood of hatchery fish that could conceivably be changed, reduced, increased, or transfers, or any of that business? So, or are we going to be in the exact same holding pattern that we've been and preserve our options? And after that, I have a question about the major part of the policy, but maybe take these one at a time.
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McIsaac, thank you for the question and thank you for going one at a time. No, you're in fact correct. We will have the hatchery 2020 egg take programs in front of you in February. We are not, don't want to circumvent the policy and your policy and allow you to see what actions are available to you and how you might give us possible interim guidance, not only about fishery management, but hatchery operations and release strategies.
Okay, good. Thank you. And then from June to December, or June to October, my question is going to be oriented toward when is a public review draft going to be maybe in front of the commission, or do you propose it being in front of the Fish Committee? But what we heard in December was something that everybody seemed to like, and that was the staff will come back with some policy options that the commission can start to sort things out, and then a new policy draft would be put together that would go out for some public comment, and maybe there'll be another draft, but it would move toward finality. So when I look at June, it says brief the commission on policy revisions. Is this where we would have some draft language options to choose from? Or if you scroll to the next slide, you have public meetings. So anyway, I guess I wasn't clear where in August or when is it that there would be an actual draft initial, the first draft after we've sorted things out and said, please go put a new bunch of language on this one. Don't bother on that one. Don't bother on the other one. Here's the big ones. When does the first draft come out? So that's kind of a sloppy question. I apologize for that, Mr. Warren, but could you add some clarity about when it is we're going to see some actual options to choose from, and when is the first draft going to go out to the public?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McIsaac, again, good clarifying question. Appreciate that. Our intent is that through the previous Fish Committee meetings and continuing to work with the Fish Committee, our first draft to the commission would be in June.
Okay.
The Fish Committee, and because those have been public in the past, the public may be seeing products that we develop to share with the committee. But as a full policy in draft format for commission guidance and direction would be start in June.
Okay, so at March and April, this presumes that the Fish Committee would be making, I don't know if you want to call them mini decisions or something like that, about what policy options ought to be discarded and not carried forward?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Ron, if I may. With North of Falcon and so on upcoming, when do you get the sense that, because we historically manage Willapa Bay by time and area for both sectors, when will that information be out to the general public? Is that the third week of April or later than that with this strategy?
Chair Carpenter, we are trying to separate the North of Falcon season setting process and the policy revision. So as soon as we are done with North of Falcon, and as we continue to develop ideas, we'll check back in with Fish Committee and with the overall goal of bringing a first, maybe incomplete draft, but a first full look at what we believe the policy would be for the commission in June.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that. I was just trying to relate to a little bit about the county commissioner from down there and the concerns in that rural community about the economic benefit of the fisheries, both sport and commercial, and lodging and boat moorage and et cetera, et cetera. So I think that sounds good, Ron. Thank you.
And Chair Carpenter, just to add, we're certainly looking at a possible revision or a possible final adoption in the end of 2021. Our guess is that we could have this complete in October. Our plans are that it would not alter the 2021 fishery packages that are developed in North Falcon, that this would be a policy that fishery implementation, hatchery modifications in the 2021 brood and in the 2022 fishery season.
Makes sense to me. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. So Nikki, if you could advance forward, I'm not seeing any additional questions, and we'll turn it over to Chad. Is Chad here? Hey, Nikki, is he in the attendance?
I did see his name there earlier.
But I did too.
Yeah, I sent him a link too when you initially asked this morning. So I thought maybe he was going off bat, but I just promoted him, I guess, and
okay,
should be good now.
Yep, I'm here. Thank you. Chair Carpenter, Vice Chair Baker, commissioners, thank you for allowing me this opportunity. I'm just going to walk through a few slides. I'm going to try and do it as briefly as possible, just considering the time that we're at. So could we go to the next slide, please? So I'm just going to kind of talk a little bit about the interim guidance that we received in 2018, 2019, and 2020 as we worked through the comprehensive review of phase one of the implementation and performance of the policy. So one of the things that precipitated the need for interim guidance in the 2018 fishery planning process was as we had implemented, one of the aspects of the policy was this increased monitoring effort. And one of the things that we noticed as we increased this monitoring effort, we found that the recreational fishery had far exceeded its expectation during policy development of the impact on unmarked Chinook in Willapa Bay, specifically geared towards Willapa River and Chinook River. And that manifested itself in a couple of ways. One of it was that for the 15th fishery season and the 16th fishery season, once we finalized run reconstructions, we did exceed our 20% terminal harvest rate cap on the Willapa and Naso River stocks for those years. So once we counted all the beans up, we were higher just due to that increase, unanticipated increase in recreational effort and harvest. And the other way was because we have these harvest rate caps in the policy, it really, because that grew to such a magnitude, it really impacted our ability to provide any sort of commercial opportunity given the recreational priority for Chinook to the recreational sector. So the outcome in terms of the guidance that was received for that year, this by no means is meant to capture everything that was put in the guidance, just a couple of key points, was for the staff to actively manage for a 20% impact rate cap on those Willapa and Naso River unmarked Chinook stocks in Willapa Bay. As a portion of that 20%, 9% would be set aside. So just a little less than half of the total impacts would be set aside to allow for plan for commercial fisheries. It also had us increase our active monitoring of recreational fishing effort in the marine area and set some timeframes around we would do that, when we would do that, centered around the high catch periods. One of the implementation features of the policy was to, we liberalized recreational Chinook bag limits over what had historically been done. And so we gave us some direction to explore reductions in those bag limits and to think about how we might curtail high catch periods in order to meet that objective of not going over the 20% impact rate cap. So next slide. 2019, the concerns in terms of the interim guidance were still basically the same. We still had this really high recreational harvest rate that we had seen, and high is the wrong word, much more higher than what was expected during policy development. And just to put that in perspective, there's some language in the policy development around that we anticipated that impact to be about 3.2% for marine recreational fisheries. And what we saw in data collected in the 2015 and 2016 year was harvest rates on Willapa River unmarked Chinook stocks of upwards of 14%, depending on the year. So that really, once again, impacted our ability to provide any impacts to plan for commercial fisheries. It's also important to note that 2019 was the first year of phase two. So while in the fishery seasons 2015 through 18, we had a 20% impact rate cap to Willapa and Naso River stocks, 2019 was the first year that was supposed to drop to 14. So given that increase in recreational harvest rate, it basically left us no impacts available for commercial fisheries whatsoever. The guidance that was received, very similar to 2018, once again, not trying to characterize all the guidance that was received, just touch on a couple of main points. Once again, was to actively manage for a 20% impact rate cap to Willapa and Naso River Chinook stocks, wild stocks. They also suspended some of the time and area restrictions around commercial fisheries to allow the staff to use their knowledge and experience of the fishery to try and plan that fishery best to achieve all the management objectives. And then provide us with some flexibility to determine the bag limits for recreational fisheries. So moving on to 2020, next slide, please.
Hey, Chad, question.
Yep.
The bag limit for the recreational fishery in 2018 was what?
I believe I would thank you, Chair Carpenter. Good question. I believe it was three fish. I believe it might have been two fish, though. I'd have to go back and check my notes. I don't have that expressly right in front of me.
Well, what year was it that it was that you guys set it at four?
That was the 15 and 16, and I believe 17 fishery seasons. And then in 18, we went down to a 3-fish bag. And then subsequently, we've gone down to a 2-fish bag in the recent years.
Thank you.
So while setting up interim guidance for 2020, we still had some of the same concerns, although as the number of hatchery fish has been reduced as we've moved through implementation of the policy, we saw a lower in fishery season 17, 18, 19. We saw a lower recreational impact rate to those stocks I mentioned earlier. But one of the big concerns for us going into planning for 2020 was this low forecasted abundance of natural origin coho. I believe the forecast came in at about 16,000 fish, which was only about 2,500 above our management objective of 13,600 natural origin spawners. So given the mixed stock nature of the fishery, along with some of these harvest rate things that we've talked about, it needed some more interim guidance as we were working through the comprehensive review. That guidance was to carry forward most everything that went through in 2019, except for we would implement the 14% harvest rate on Willapa River and Naso River wild Chinook stocks, as opposed to the 20% that was in the 2019 guidance. So that's kind of it for my background around the interim guidance that we received across the last 3 fishery seasons. Next slide, please. And now just kind of to further set the stage for interim guidance for February. And we'll definitely come back with a more thorough breakdown of some of those issues, specifically the hatchery management. Ron kind of already addressed that earlier, that we'll deal with that in the February presentation. But as we work through finalizing the comprehensive review document, which was accepted as final in the December commission meeting, took a lot of public comment through that almost 3-year process, working on that comprehensive review. And in December, we kind of presented this idea that the majority of the public comment breaks down into these kind of 4 main issues, which can basically be split into 2 categories: hatchery management and fishery management. For the hatchery management, the 2 issues that kind of were the main points from a lot of the public comment we heard was concern around the population designations for Chinook, and then also the specific hatchery production levels set forth for Chinook in the policy. Today, I'm more so going to focus on the fishery management issues. The 2 of those were the rebuilding timeframe and the species harvest prioritization. And these fishery management issues are kind of what we're looking for some interim guidance on for planning of 2021 fisheries. So next slide, please. And so these 2 slides were presented during the December commission meeting. A lot of stuff here. I think in the interest of time, I'm just going to go over a couple of brief points. If any commissioners have any questions, they can feel free to follow up when we get to discussion. But basically the rebuilding timeframe. So the rebuilding timeframe for Chinook was intended, the policy actions was intended to meet the management objective of achieving natural origin escapement objectives in policy implementation year 16 to 2021. So what's important about that is it was developed from public feedback. We did not perform any sort of analyses or anything to set that 16 to 21 years. It was expressly determined based on the public comment that we've received about how quickly folks would like us to see these stocks recovered. We used an AHA model, a modeling tool, to come up with the 14% and 20% impact rate caps that would be necessary to achieve the goal of meeting those objectives in 16 to 21 years. And the main point here is there's a lot of uncertainty that went into that modeling. The graph on the right here kind of shows that. What we have here is a graph of estimates of the Nacelle River Fall Chinook natural origin spawner escapement per policy year. And the blue line would represent escapement objectives that the model would predict in good ocean condition years, and the red line under a poor ocean condition. So we can see there's a lot of room in between both of those lines. And obviously, you know, we've all heard about where we've been in terms of ocean conditions, you know, since 2015 with the blob and continued marine heat waves. You know, so we can, I think we can safely say that the recent past, the ocean conditions have been not favorable. So it was always always a part of the policy that some adaptive management would be necessary, given this uncertainty in the modeling that was done during policy development. So next slide, please. The other fishery management issues is around the species harvest prioritization. It prioritized Chinook harvest for the recreational sector and coho and chum for the commercial sector. Part of the language in there is it would only allow for the other sector's harvest if there was impacts remaining, if you interpret that in the kind of letter of the law in terms of how it's written. It's important to note that Willapa Bay is mixed stock fishery area. So in order to prosecute a directed coho fishery, you need some available Chinook impacts and some available chum impacts, because you're going to encounter those species regardless of really what time or area you try and prosecute those fisheries. In just reinforcing some of the harvest priority to the recreational sector for Chinook, there were also some area and time restrictions for commercial fisheries, really focused on not commercially fishing during the Chinook management period when the majority of Chinook are moving through the bay. So didn't really provide us much flexibility in scheduling those fisheries. So very little access to any Chinook impacts that may be remaining for the commercial sector. Also, we've seen that the reliance on coho and chum economically for the commercial sector, those coho run sizes can be very highly variable. We've seen kind of the bottom end of that over these last 5 years in Willapa Bay. And it's also hampered our ability to develop some fishery management tools, specifically a run size update model for Chinook based on the performance and effort in commercial fisheries. So I know I went through that stuff pretty fast, and thank goodness I've had enough coffee and energy drink to blow through this in a time frame I think even Ron would be proud of. So I think that's my last slide. We'll go to questions, and thank you.
You're muted, Larry.
Commissioner Thorburn, please, and then Commissioner McKenzie.
So thanks, Chad. Always good to hear from you and your clear presentations. So as I understand it, the interim guidance that you're going to be seeking in February, based on our December discussion, you know, and the policy moving forward, doesn't look like it's all that separate from the policy revisions that we've talked about. It looks like you're looking for interim guidance that's quite a bit broader than for the upcoming fishery than we've given in the past. Am I understanding that correctly?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Thornburn, no, I don't think we're really asking for anything more than really some basic guidance to be used in North of Falcon planning, just based on the outcome of the comprehensive review and where we are just in our understanding of how all this works in Willapa Bay. I would think I think we'll be proposing some recommendations in our February presentation for guidance, have some recommendation there. But I'm not looking for anything broader than what we've done in the last couple of years.
Thanks.
Commissioner McKenzie.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, mine's just a process question here. So we've had the staff presentation here. They're asking the commission to give some guidance. We're going to have public testimony, and then we come back after that and we provide some guidance on things we'd like the staff to look into so that when February's meeting rolls around, that's when we give some guidance on things like for the hatchery program should, you know, this is, I'll say this so that people who are testifying in public can think about it in terms of what they are interested in telling us. In the hatchery part of it, should we preserve our options like we've done or do something different? And in fishing, for Chinook salmon, there's been a 14% rate used and there's been a 20% rate used. What do we want the staff to do between now and February to help make that guidance? Species priority, the same thing. What would we like to ask the staff to do on that so we can give some good guidance in February? And we don't have the commercial expert, Mr. Commissioner Kehoe, here. I'll say the word test fishery because he would at this point before public testimony too. So, but the question is, that's what we're going to do. After public comment, then we come back and ask for this, that, or the other thing to be looked into between now and February, and that's when we give guidance is then.
Chad or Ron, when do you anticipate having the preseason forecast for the Willapa stocks?
Chair Carpenter, staff are diligently working on that. We've got, as part of the North of Falcon process, we've got some dates identified for exchange with our co-managers and whatnot. And then when those technical agreements would be reached and then policy agreements. Obviously for Willapa Bay, we don't have those co-managers, but we still try and utilize those same dates in terms of deadlines of just getting those forecasts done. I believe got some preliminary information about forecasts moving forward for this year. I think we're still maybe a week out from nailing a real specific number.
So you'll have them by February?
Absolutely.
Because I think Commissioner McIsaac raised some good points, but if you talk about 20% versus 14%, that's a real tough discussion to have if you don't know what your preseason abundances are.
Absolutely, Chair Carpenter. Great point. One forecast we do have is our natural origin coho forecast that is generated by our science division and put out in the wild coho, statewide wild coho forecast document that our science division, Dr. Marisa Litz, works on. We utilize that document for coho forecasting in Willapa Bay. That method went through STT review last year and was accepted by the STT and the PFMC as a forecasting method. So I can tell you that right now that forecast is 19,000 and I believe 64 fish for Willapa Bay natural origin coho. While that's a better forecast than what we had last year, it is low compared to our historic, what we've had historically, but does appear to be a little, you know, better than what we had last year. Preliminary looks at the chum forecast look to be, you know, about what we would normally have in that 45 to 55,000 range. And Chinook is where the most uncertainty is. Yeah. I don't have a number for Chinook at this point in time. Staff are still working on that. And they're still working through the chum. So that's why I know it's going to be somewhere in that range.
Thank you, Chad. Okay, before we go to public, pardon me, public comment, Commissioner Anderson has his hand up.
Yes, my question has to do with the Chinook information and the run size update model. And, you know, I think the coho modeling has improved over the years in Willapa, but the Chinook is not, and it appears that's a hole in our ability to have some ability to kind of look at where things are at in season. So I guess my comments of perspective in that, I think that is probably more important than we're giving it credit for the potential advantage of having it. So maybe people discuss pros and cons, we get input, we can hear about that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Anderson. Nikki, do you want to read the preamble to the public comment part of this agenda item, please?
Absolutely. We'll now take public comment from attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes for comment. If you are pre-registered, we ask that you still raise your hand so we can see you in the queue. Everyone is currently muted. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear you have been unmuted. That's your indication it is your turn to speak. I know we've got more than one hand. There we go. Okay. All right. We're going to start with 8793 followed by 4932. 8793, I've unmuted you. Please state your name for the record.
Can you hear me, commissioners?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. My name is Andy Mitby. In the last presentation, one of the commissioners said, we don't want to drag this out for a long time. And this policy has been drug out for a long time. And we have yet to move forward. Last year, we went into the 14%. And as Chad said, the coho runs are very volatile. The year previous, we still had the 20%, but we didn't use it all. When we went to the 14%, it made the season so stringent, we were unable to harvest a miscalculated run of coho. So when you go to the 14%, you have no wiggle room for anybody. Okay. If you have the 20% or 30% or whatever it is, you don't have to use it, but it allows you some room for error if you have cause to use it. So if there's some interim guidance coming down the line, you know, we can go to 20%. Doesn't mean we have to use it. But if we miss our run sizes and need it, then, you know, we've got some room to work. As we move forward with this policy, the rural jobs, you know, at some point you got to say, this is costing them a lot of rural jobs. And somebody brought up the economic factor. Well, what the policy has done now basically has shrunk your fleet so low, we've lost the jobs. And if the policy is so important, not for a conservation level, but an allocation level, that it's going to cost the jobs, the local jobs, I think we've missed our point. Okay. They can have a priority on opportunity, but you don't have to have the priority to say they're just going to get all the fish on paper and we won't have room for a commercial fishery. There are some things that need to change drastically in the policy, and it's pretty much the whole policy that drastically needs to change. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Andy, for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next, we've got caller 4932. You've been unmuted. Please state your name for the record.
This is Ross Barkers. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you. Former advisor, I've advised on a policy. It was the best public input and the best, longest, most scientific process I've been involved in here, and we came up with a policy. Some of us see the problem as that we've never followed the policy, and that goes back to year one when the 20% cap was exceeded and we did no payback. What we've heard from the commercial advisors over the last 4 years is the policy is no good. We don't want a policy. We don't want priority for recreational fishermen. We don't want advisors. And we achieved that goal from listening to Mr. Warren earlier. It sounded like, well, you can call yourself an advisor. But we won't have advisor meetings where we go over what's missing now, which is the preseason forecast, models, the various model options, and so forth, and discuss them before the public meeting. That appears to be over. 4 years ago, you all stood down from HSRG for a year to study it. Okay. Haven't had HSRG for 4 years. After 4 years of studying, from what I hear with the new hatchery policy, which sounds pretty good, apparently we use best available science, and HSRG is it. And so here we are with a policy that's never been followed. We've used interim guidance. Part of the problem is the interim guidance. The policy does not specify limits. In other words, when somebody said you can catch four Chinook, that wasn't in the policy. That's something that we do to manage the run. If the limit was wrong, you adjust it. For years, we heard that we have to have all these nets because the recreational fishermen can't catch enough of these hatchery fish we're trying to get rid of. Apparently, that was disproved. And so we've gone 4 years without HSRG. We've gone 5 years not following the policy. And you're looking at interim guidance that we haven't seen. And apparently, there will not be an advisor meeting to advise on what kind of minimum guidance we might want to have. And so the maiden Willapa is really afraid, and so am I. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Russ. And next, Nikki.
Yeah.
Next, we have Greg King, followed by Butch Smith. Go ahead, Greg.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Good afternoon, Chair Carpenter, Commission, staff. Thank you for the presentation, staff. Larry, you're the last of the Mohicans. You are the last commissioner when this policy was erected way back then when Miranda Wacker was in place. This policy has been a failure from the get-go. It's been a feeble attempt to destroy coastal fishermen in the commercial fishing industry on the coast. This is when I talk about out-of-state special interest groups trying to destroy our coastal communities. I'm a sportsman, and I agree with Mr. Mitby that they need to fish at a 20% take. This commercial and sports advisory group they transferred all the production out of the North Bay, out of Forks Creek Hatchery down south, trying to destroy those commercial fishermen. And it didn't work. They found out, oh, geez, this isn't working. We don't have a fishery now because we don't have any fish in the North Bay. It's pretty simple math. First off, you can't make the Nima a Chum River, a Chinook River, and none of these fish are ESA'd. There's no ESA listing on Willapa Bay. There's no tribal entities on Willapa Bay. It's a sportsman's paradise. We should be producing fish there for sportsmen to fish on. NOAA Fisheries has came out. I've asked NOAA Fisheries, what can we do on Willapa Bay? And they said, what would you like to do? And they said, sky's the limit on production. We need to fix this problem ASAP. It's just a nightmare. I've suggested to Mr. Warren that we do I think it was 250, 350 million down at Nacelle and 350 at Forks Creek. And Bob, Bob Lake agreed with me. And I worked with these commercial guys, and this is what I'm talking about, working with tribal and commercial fishermen in sports. I have Mr. Mitby's number on my speed dial on my phone, and I can call him right now and talk to him. And there's not many people that can do that in the sports fishing world, is talk to the commercial fishermen and work these things out. We need to start producing fish in Willapa Bay to keep our coastal communities alive. My gosh, guys, let's get on this. You know, I've been at all these commissions. Maybe I missed one Willapa one, you know, because of other obligations with family, but we need to fix this. Larry, you still got that place down there? Didn't you buy a place down there, Larry? I know you'd love to go fish Willapa. I know you would.
I haven't been down there, but yeah, there's a place down there.
Yeah, but this is a beautiful place for sportsmen. We go clam digging down there. We go salmon fishing down there. We go and get oysters down there. You know, these communities are just dying. We have to resurrect these fisheries. And it's, you know, it seems like we just, you know, kicked the can down the road and down the road. Let's do some good stuff and resurrect these fisheries. They're great fisheries. So anyway, I hope I didn't offend anybody, but I'm real passionate about this. So,
well, Commissioner Thorburn has a comment or a question. Commissioner Thorburn.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, Kim.
The birding's great too. So Larry doesn't take all the heat. I was on the commission as well. But I'm really happy with the questions that have been brought forward by the policy review and hope we're going in the right direction.
I hope we are too. Thank you, Kim.
Yeah, thank you for that. Okay, Nikki, next, please.
Next is Butch Smith, followed by Jason Lake. Go ahead, Butch.
Good afternoon, commissioners. It's been a while. So I'd just like to say a few things that... you know, Greg hit on a lot of things. There are a lot of us out here that believe in making the pie bigger for all, sport fishing as well as commercial fishing. And those of you that don't know, I make almost 99% of my income from sport fishing. I have the oldest family-owned charter office on the West Coast. But I'm also a community person, and I know the value of the commercial fishermen to my community and the value of help getting those hatchery fish off the spawning beds or out of the hatcheries so we don't have surpluses where we're sending beautiful coho or Chinook salmon up to American Canada for pennies on the pound. And so I'm not going to speak to the exact policy, but I know this: fish can't read, and managers have to have the tools to adjust to whatever the runs are. They have to be able to a test fisheries. They have to be able to go up and down in percentages to a point. If you set policy, as we have found out in Columbia River, Willapaw, HS, you know, whatever you want to pick, if you take a policy and lock it down so tight, and you don't give the people that you hire to manage the fisheries the tools to do their job, I guarantee you policies will fail every single time. And so I just want you to keep that in mind. Keep that in mind that I love when Commissioner Carpenter or Greg King or maybe even Fred will put that fly down and put an anchovy on one time and come salmon fishing in our community. We love that. But just as much as we love them, we love our commercial fishermen that keep our community going year round. So I want you to keep that in mind, that this coastal community, you do not come to El Waco, except maybe Kim. There are some birds around here, but you do not come to El Waco to walk on the mudflats. You come to El Waco to fish, whether you work in a cannery, work on a commercial boat, bring your own private boat down, or go on a charter boat. That's what you come to our communities. Westport's the same and on up the coast. So please, when you make these policies, keep in mind that you've hired people that to manage your fish, but give them the tools to manage so we're not so tied down that we can't adapt to bigger runs or smaller runs. It goes both ways. So that's all I say, and thank you very much for your time.
Okay, Butch, thank you, and have a good weekend. Next, Nikki.
Next is Jason Lake, followed by caller 1229. Go ahead, Jason.
Hi, good afternoon, Commission. You know, Pacific County's economies are based on seafood. This pandemic has taken its toll on our coastal communities, and we need to take it into account that all the salmon in Willapaw Bay share the same DNA by species, which makes all the salmon stocks a renewable natural resource in Willapaw through our hatchery and hatchery stray natural programs. Today, it came out in the news, Pacific County has the highest unemployment rate in the state. I have a solution. Let's raise fish, create opportunity for both commercial and recreational fishermen, which will help boost our local economies. Then if we need more naturals up the creek, we can just wait for the first big rain and high water, and they will all swim around the weirs and add to the natural escape ones that share the same DNA. You know, and then on this impact deal that you guys threw us in 14%, and we watched American Canadian trucks go down the road loaded with salmon, and nothing stayed in our local economies. I mean, give your managers the tools. Make the the impact rate 50%. Who cares? They're all the same DNA. Let them go up the creek. I mean, you don't even need weirs or waste the money on weirs. Let's raise fish and create opportunity. Thank you very much and have a good day.
Jason, thank you for your comments. You as well. Next, Nikki.
Next, we have caller 1229, followed by Greg McMillan. Go ahead, caller. Make sure to state your name for the record, please.
There we go. Hello.
Hello.
You get me now?
Yep, we got you.
All righty. Hello, Chair. This is Larry and Commission. This is Lance Gray. Been a long time since I've been on the testimony. I wish I didn't have to do it at all. But as a former, I guess, Willapa Bay commercial advisor, I sat through all of this and with Ron and Kurt long before we had this plan to come up with this policy. Very frustrated with the amount of time it has taken us to come up with a review. And I think we dealt with that earlier when Don was speaking to the issue you had before this. We seem to just drag on while we starve to death. We have spent the last 5 years in our fishery starving to death. Everybody in the state collected a check. Our county and our fishermen did not. Last year, we finally had the opportunity to catch some fish. There was a much better run of coho than what we'd predicted. And I know Chad, and I know the next person that's going to manage this, they do the best job they can to come up with a prediction for you that you want to see next month. But remember, it's just a guess. I mean, for them to say we hit it right, if you looked at it on paper over the last 20 years, they're never going to hit it right. Your odds of winning the lottery are probably better. And they aren't very good because I've been trying to do that. So the thing I want to say is we can make a policy, but like Butch said, when you make this policy so tight, oh, we're going to manage to 20%. There are groups that scrutinize the state, and they would love nothing more than to sue the state if they got 20.5%. That's the problem with these policies. Last year, we could see we had way more coho than we predicted. There was we made countless calls to Chad, to our manager, and I'm sure when he saw my phone number ring, he was like, oh my God, here we go again. But we wasted those fish for our fishery that finally had a chance to go make some money. So what I'm asking is, I can understand us going to a 20% impact. We may not use it. We may use it. But as the future goes on, we have to look at this policy, and it's 16 to 20 years, and the ridiculous idea that that was going to work, all it did was to strap us down to an impact number that we can never achieve, that we can never have a fishery. That's all it was there for. 14%, we will never exist. So you might as well just say, we're not going to have hatchery fishing in Willapa, and we're going to get rid of the commercial fishery. I'd almost feel better if you were honest with us and said that. But if you want to have a great sport fishery, which I'm 100% behind, I haven't gone to an advisory meeting ever and said, I want to get rid of the recreational fishery. I have always said, and I enjoy doing it no different than you do, Larry, and anybody else. I recreational fish, but I fished commercially 99.9% of my income year round comes from commercial fishing. And I bring my funds back to this county and I spend my money here. So you have to look as we go forward and realize that 20% on some years is fine. On some years, it's not. We've got to get away from just tying the hands of our managers and saying, this is it. no other number and move on. Some years are better than others. And we, as commercial fishermen, are willing to accept that. Thank you for your time, and everybody have a great day.
Lance, thank you for your comments. No questions, it looks like. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Greg McMillan, followed by Ron Gardner. Go ahead, Greg.
Hello, you get me?
Yep, we got you.
Yeah, Greg McMillan here. I guess we're all former advisors now. I was on the commercial side, and we've been beating this horse for quite a few years now, and I think it's very obvious. We've stated that all along through this policy. This policy was meant to do one thing, and that was get rid of us, get rid of the commercial side, and like Lance had just said, you know, we just keep dragging the inevitable out, and we just eventually have to come to the realization that if we want to have a fishery, then we need to have a fisheries for everybody. You know, we're raising fish. The more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned, but everybody needs a right at them. And you know, that being said, is you know, this policy is just way too strict. It like's been said before, it's just too much. It puts too much, the fishery manager can't do anything, you know, and it's just putting us, you know, the two user groups fighting and nothing gets done. I understand why the advisory board's gone. Nothing got done. It was just always a complete fight. And it's because of this policy, and it's because of the wording of the policies, the priorities, you know, the harvest rates, or everything has to be, you know, it just needs to be changed. If you want a working policy, I mean, we've always said we have no problem with the recreational fishery having a fishery. But the problem is we're the meat in the middle, the commercial sector. When this policy was made, it was for the marine area fisheries to get their fish, you know, and then here we fish behind them and then in front of the freshwater fishery. Well, now it's the freshwater fishery. You know, it's just we have to come to a realization that you know, as long as we get our escapements, as long as we get the things, let's just run fisheries the way it is, because it's just not working. All it does is put these communities that we live in at odds with our neighbors, a lot of them. And it's ridiculous. These hatcheries can raise some fish. Let's raise some fish for everybody to catch. But you have to get out. This 14% harvest rate absolutely decimated our fishery. We sent a lot of fish up the river in two main big water events where the weirs went down on the nacelle. You know, one it sent a lot of salmon, a lot of Chinook over, and the next one sent a lot of coho over. So, you know, it was a total waste, and sad to see that, because this year we could have all seen some more revenue for our communities. So, okay, well, I mean, it's got to change. I just think that thing needs to be thrown out and started over, because you fix one part of it and something else is going to get you. So, I mean, it was designed for one thing, and that was to get rid of commercial fishery. That's all it's done successfully. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Greg. Nikki, what have we got? One more.
So we've got Ron Gardner, Commissioner Olson, and Brian Blake.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ron.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of reiterate what we said last time. I want to go back with history on this. We had a very good working system in the Willapaw, where both recreationals and commercials had a wonderful fishery. Then I want to go back to the step before. It's a man-made Chinook fishery. The Chinook never existed in wild form and down in there in the bay. They were brought in as eggs and made into this for the non-tribal commercials, which was said a little earlier. And the recreationals got a benefit from it. But when you go changing a policy to the point where there's no ESA concerns and try and put HSRG and ESA, in a system that never had it or needed it, because it's, again, it's strictly man-made for fishing. We all lost. And I came from a small town myself, and I had to leave there because of economy. I couldn't make a living there. And when I go to these economies, I see where I came from, and it makes me sick. They need every dollar they can to keep the roads, the hospitals, the schools. And they don't need us coming from Seattle down there punching them in the gut. This is crazy. I mean, every one of us probably have pretty good paying jobs, or did, you know, for you that are retired. But why did we have to kill off this community? That's what we've continually done to the coast, especially on something when you could go, if your eggs, I remember way back when I was hearing how they didn't make egg take, then found out that it was man-made. Now, there's a big difference there. When you can go take the eggs, again, out of any other hatchery, because it's the same fish, no ESA concerns, why are we making it that? Let's go back. Let's put the output back up, and let's let everybody catch it. I fish Westport. I don't really fish Willapa much. But I can tell you some of the best fishing I've had has been right in front of the entrance of Willapa. And the fish either hold up there or go in, and it's just fantastic fishing in the past. And there's just no reason to not fix this fishery. So I'm just going to ask you to keep that in mind and go back and make something for the community down there, and let them thrive again. Let's quit trying to kill off communities. When they put the infrastructure together, it helps us when we go down and fish. We have ramps. In Westport, we have places to get our anchovies. You have a full infrastructure that we get to use, but you start killing that off, we're going to be paying $1,000 a month for mortgage down there. So let's help out Willapa and the communities down there, and let's turn this thing back around and make some fish for everybody. Bob Lake and I had talked about this, and we were starting to get really serious about how we were going to work together, commercial and recreational, to try and fix this. And it's sad that he passed away, because he is really a neat guy. And I want to see this fixed, because it's not an HSRG or ESA concern, period. Thank you for your time today. And I want to thank all of you for all of your time, because I know every one of you are just as dedicated. I had a talk with Barbara Baker, and she said you're all overachievers. And I laughed and I said, boy, is that true? You know? Every one of you put a lot of time in, and we just appreciate everything that all you do. And you too, Ron. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Ron. Okay, Nikki, it's Lisa Olson, right?
Yeah, Commissioner Olson. Yeah. Oh, hold on, lost her. Okay, Lisa, I think we got you.
Got it. Thank you, Nikki. I think I'm on twice. I was had it on my phone too, because I'm roaming around trying to do things around the house, multitasking. First of all, I want to apologize to the commission for when I spoke on the hatchery policy. Mr. McIsaac bailed me out a couple times ago, and I forgot to tell you who I was. I'm a sitting county commissioner in Pacific County on the professional side. So I'm mostly here to talk about the economics, but also on a personal side, I have a family that has gone back and made their living on Willapa Bay in the oyster industry for about 150 years. So we have deep roots here in this regard. And I just want to, I'm going to be pretty pithy. I'm not going to reiterate anything, a lot of the stuff that the guys have already said, because they're absolutely right. I don't think that anybody currently sitting on this commission had the intent for this policy to kill commercial fishery, but I think that's been the outcome. And the last couple of years with the low returns and the low releases from the hatcheries, it's working on putting a pretty big damper on the sport fishery also. So I said in one of the meetings I testified at a couple of years ago that the fish don't overthink this, and I don't think we should either. I think it's pretty simple, especially in the Willapa system. We've got a perfect solution here, not to be redundant, but, you know, we've got no tribal situation. We've got no ESA listing. The Chinook are not. We've got mud flats here. We don't have rocky streams. So what comes back here is pretty much what is hatched here. It's a great coho river. It's a fantastic chum river. We can really have a fantastic outcome here if we just don't force nature and do what we need to do. As somebody else said, it's a really great place for sportsmen of all kinds. We've got oysters, we've got clams, we've got fish. We've got a great elk herd for people to hunt. It's a bit of a sportsman's paradise, but there's a whole lot of us that would like to live and work here too. And the Pacific County economy currently is built on the natural resources. We have no big box stores. We have small, there's a bit of a corporate influence here and there, but it's mostly, we've got government, we've got county, state, school, city, and we've got small businesses. And between the kind of clampdown on most of our natural resources in this COVID, we're in a bit of a tight place. We're hurting. And I'm just really begging you to make that a component. You know, none of us here are advocating for any kind of a decline in the resource, because that doesn't suit any of us. We want it to be done smartly, and we want it to be done beneficially. So thank you all. Chair Carpenter, thank you for advocating my concerns at the beginning. I appreciate that very much. And thank you all for letting me speak. Have a good day.
Thank you, Lisa, for your comments. You as well. Okay, Nikki, next, please.
Next and last, we have Brian Blake. Go ahead, Brian.
All right. Can you hear me?
We yes, can. We
can. Oh, thank you, Chair Carpenter, Vice Chair Baker, and commissioners, and including the new ones. I'm Brian Blake. My family's lived on the coast since 1888, and both on the Willapa and Grays Harbor, and I've most recently served as chair of the Ag and Natural Resources Committee in the legislature, and you have never seen me testify before the Fish and Wildlife Commission, because I thought as a sitting legislator, it was important that I not interfere in your business. But here I am today. You know, one of the things I tried to do as a legislator is find balance. And I will tell you, in my opinion, the current Willapa policy is not balanced. And it's biased against the community. And I am asking the commission to revise the policy and find that balance. As you've heard, your own staff at Fish and Wildlife will tell you that the Willapa Bay system is not a Chinook system, never has been. As you heard earlier from Ron and others, we created a genetically homogeneous Chinook run to benefit fishermen. It's a beautiful coho natural system. It's a beautiful chum natural system. And focusing on restoring genetics of those two species of salmon, I think, is important. But I think this Willapa plan that was fixated on generating a genetically distinct runs of Chinook is a failed policy. As I think the entire commission knows, under the Federal ESA Act, salmon are managed by ESUs. And as this policy was originally developed, people kept holding this over our heads that, oh, Willapa Bay could be listed. And we all know, I hope we all know, that that's just not true. When you list a species of salmon, you list it by ESU. And we all know that the if you look at habitat along the entire coast of Washington, the coastal Chinook ESU, if we were going to ask a basin or several basins to carry that ESU with wild genetics, we would think about the Queet system and the Quinault system and the Hump Tulips and the Upper Chehalis and the spring run there. If we're talking about the importance of these genetics in this coast-wide system, those are where I would focus my effort as a commission and a department in preserving Chinook genetics. The Willapa system, again, as I said, is not a Chinook system. It's critical that you move quickly, in my opinion, to change this Willapa policy so it's more equitable and restore both the sport and commercial fishing that historically occurred there. And that can be done. You have wonderful staff. I have to tell you, I'm impressed with the staff that work at the agency. And I fought hard to get investment in the hatcheries in the Willapa system. Hopefully we can get phase two and three in the nacelle system in this year's budget. And with that, I just thank you for all the hard work you do as commissioners. I know these are tough decisions, and I wish you well. Thank you.
Hold on a minute. Representative Blake, we have a question from Commissioner Linville.
Actually, it's just a quick comment. I just wanted to thank Mr. Blake for his service to the state, and I hope that Ms. Blake, you'll be in the commission's business a lot more now. That would be terrific, I think.
I can imagine you will see that, yes.
Great.
Brian, thank you for your comments today, and have a nice weekend.
You bet. You too.
Hey, Larry. Okay. Commissioner Olson has her hand back up.
Okay, we'll let her speak. Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you. And I just had one kind of question I forgot to mention. I was wondering, since it appears that this policy revision is going to go well into the year and into plans for commercial and sport fishery, but mostly on the commercial end, are there going to be any, if the current policy is going to be in place, I was wondering if there could be some sort of an official amendment made or something for staff to be able to manage this upcoming system while waiting for the new guidance for the policy, or a complete new policy, or whatever it is going to happen. And that's all I wanted to mention. Thank you.
Thank you again, Lisa. Okay, that wraps up the open public comment. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, feeding off of Commissioner Olson's comment there, we heard a lot of good public testimony about, in general, changes to the plan, to the policy that we would consider over the course of the year. I think what the staff is asking under this agenda item right now is exactly the question that Commissioner Olson brought up. What about February, when some guidance is needed for the year 2021, because the policy changes, if we complete them on time, will be in effect for 2022 and beyond. So I have a short list here that would help, I think, the commission, help me as a commission member, provide some guidance when we talk again in February. On the hatchery side, anything that would be associated with preserving options while we move through the possibility of changes. In particular, Forks Creek Hatchery, which I know has a hole in it due to some reduced releases. But any information related to that in February, I think would be useful for us to provide direction on for the 2020 brood. With regard to the fishery, much has been spoken about these 14 and 20% Chinook harvest rates, which are in-basin harvest rates. They're not complete harvest rates or fishery rates that take into account the U.S.-Canada arena or the Pacific Fishery Management Council outside arena, and we've had some discussion about that. So what would be helpful for us to know in February is one of the things that's come up at, I think, the last three guidance meetings, and that is the original intent in 2015 when the policy was adopted was to presume an ocean take, and then whatever comes after that average ocean take limit the take inside the river to 20%, and then after one generation, drop it down to 14%. So it'd be useful for the staff to calibrate what an in-river harvest rate is in comparison to the ocean and in-river harvest rates that were in place back then, because we've had a major treaty revision for interceptions north of the Washington border. and perhaps some even south of the Washington border. So number two and associated with that comparison is, what does 14 and 20% now mean with regard to an ocean and river exploitation rate or fishery rate? So we can pretty much know what's going to go on in Canada and Alaska, and we're going to have some guesses as to the outside fishery. So something that will help us on this decision there. Number three, the effects of species priorities. And maybe I'll call that the need for an incidental take of Chinook in the coho fishery for the commercial fishermen fishery. And I think last year what we heard there was that we went to a lower harvest rate in the bay because we thought it was moot. The coho run was going to be so poor, the Chinook run was even going to be poor, and 14% would probably not even get reached. And in fact, the coho run came in very strong, and we should learn from that 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 could happen again. A lot of jacks up and down the coast, so it's a little surprising that the forecast is not that much better. But so the would be, what do we need for an incidental take to be set aside so that there can be, that mistake cannot be repeated again? Do we need a 1%, 2%, something like that, 3%, so that there's a reserve there? The next one, and I think the last one here in terms of this is Commissioner Kehoe's request. How much in terms of Chinook impacts or coho impacts, if you have to reserve some out of the coho fishery, are needed for some sort of a test fishery if water conditions permit it, so that there'd be a little bit more to go on in terms of all of this. So those are the things that would help me get into a better position to provide guidance in February. And I'd be glad to send that list if staff didn't get it scratched down. If I could read my own writing later, which is sometimes questionable, I'd be glad to send it to them.
Commissioner Kuntz, please.
February, isn't it February like next week? So probably my request is not possible, but maybe in the future. And Commissioner McIsaac, I like your list. And if I understood it right, like one thing you wanted to know was the actual sort of number of fish difference between 14% and 20% harvest rate. And along with that, I would really like to know, what is the economic impact to the community by going from 14 to 20? If, you know, again, February's next week. But in an ideal world, a new commission would like to know not only the sort of fish impact, but what the economic impact is by setting different harvest rates, or even, you know, a broad estimate, you know, because I really don't know, you know, are we talking about like magnitude changes, modest changes, or what? Thank you.
I have some thoughts too, but I guess I'm going to keep mine put away because I'm going to wait till next month to bring those up. I just think the timing of that, I want to do some more thinking about it and look forward to hearing what Ron and staff have to say, and we can go from there. But fundamentally, there's just not enough fish to make all the user groups happy. And that's one I don't have an answer for. I'll look to Ron maybe next month for that. Commissioner Smith.
Well, clearly I need a more in-depth primer on all this very complicated issues and why, you know, the economies up and down our Pacific coast have been, you know, suffering such decline is a much bigger issue than just this issue before us, but this is certainly part of it. So, but I'm trying to understand just this Chinook issue. So I'm hearing a lot of these fishermen say, I'm not sure I heard our fisheries biologists say that there are no wild fish, that they were introduced at some point and they've naturalized. I guess some are still being produced in a hatchery and some are natural spawners, but they all came from an initial introduced stock. Am I hearing that right?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Smith, you are hearing that right. The Chinook populations were mainly introduced, and I'll use a little bit different terminology than the conversation about wild fish in Puget Sound in our hatchery policy discussion with Dr. Warheit. But you've got a locally adapted stock that come from those populations that come in for hatchery production and then stray onto natural spawning grounds. From a genetics perspective, in those integrated populations, like Dr. Warheit said, you can't tell the difference. We do have a North Smith stock that we're thinking we may be able to tell some slight genetic differences just because we don't have a Chinook facility or plants going on there. And so we may have a more natural population or out of North Smith Creek. The rest of it is primarily the same population. I hope that helped.
It did. So just one more follow-up question to that. Then how would National Marine Fisheries look at these various Willapa Bay stocks, I'm going to use that word, if it came to a proposed listing, or do we know the answer to that?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Smith, I've never specifically asked that question to NOAA Fisheries, maybe because I don't want to know the answer, but it's an important question nonetheless. Our interpretation is that they would treat these stocks the same way they've treated stocks within the Puget Sound area. And my example is the Nisqually River Chinook population is extirpated. What exists there now is an integrated population from Green River Chinook that is locally adapting, and we're trying to increase its productivity to be a productive natural population. That same dynamic exists within Willapa Bay. We've got limited habitat. Most of the habitat availability is chum and coho, and we're trying to make it Chinook habitat. I think that if NOAA Fisheries came in, they would look at the locally adapted population. That's a Chinook population, and that they would consider that for listing, just like they have the populations in Puget Sound.
Thank you.
Commissioner McKaysey.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Just as a follow-up on that, we heard Representative Blake talk about listing the entire ESU. So, Mr. Warren, isn't that correct, that listing just the Willapa population is not something NIMS would ever do?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McIsaac, you're correct, as was Representative Blake. They would look across the ESU and the different populations within it. We know we have a wild population of spring Chinook. We don't do enhancement on it within the Grace Harbor Basin. There are other populations that are healthy and harvestable up the coast, and they would look at that in its entirety to whether or not to list those populations.
Okay, anything else? Okay, well, I think that wraps that up.